Right now, John Witherup has joined us, the chairman of the Gold Coast Suns. It's fair to say it's been a testing year. We played at the start of... Well, welcome, John. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Terry Wallace, Nick Maxwell and Mark Robinson back in our studio in Melbourne. But we played at the start of the show, and media has a way of doing this. We played a media grab of yourself talking about your ambitions for 3 years' time, which was including playing in a grand final, winning a grand final, and getting your membership up to 20,000 within 3 years. We're in 2015 now. Neither looks likely, particularly the on-field ambition. So what's gone wrong, or was that just a pie-in-the-sky statement?
Oh, look, so let me break it down into pieces, I suppose, is the best way to answer the question. On-field this year, there's something that we just can't hide from. It's an absolute fact. The Gold Coast Suns cannot win games with 11 of its best 18 players sitting on the sideline. Now, we can dress that up as whatever way we like, but the fact of the matter is that we simply can't win games with 11 of our best 18, you know, sitting there watching the game.
But you sacked your coach at the end of last year, so yep. Things weren't going as planned in your mind, at least.
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, let me just deal with that sort of issue. The issue with Guy was really one for the board to say, are we going to be able to get the best out of our team of players with Guy, or should we look around for someone else? And the unanimous view of the board was that we needed to perhaps get someone with deeper and more extensive experience. That's not to say we didn't have a great regard for Guy, because we did, and quite obviously I've made that clear over the time. But the reality about coaching, it's the same as if you're the Prime Minister of Australia, or you're the chairman, or you're the CEO, or for that matter, your coach. Your job is to get better or something more out of all of the people in the team than what you can achieve or what they can achieve by themselves. And so the reality is that there's an it's time factor in all of those positions. There's an it's time factor in a chairman's role, in a CEO's role, in a coach's role. And so you can be actually saying things that are really positive. You can be saying good things. Ideas can be strong and constructive. But after a seven-year period, some of those messages start to lose weight. And I think with Guy, at least in the board's view, it was probably that it's time factor, that shelf life factor, that was probably the biggest issue.
Rodney Eade's come in, though, and in that time, and granted you've had the injuries you've had, but there's been off-field issues as well. And Rodney's also talked about the lack, I guess, of football IQ, for want of, to paraphrase him, the team has. So did you think into the picture painted to Rodney vastly different to what it now appears to be?
No, because you see, one of the things that happens with winning football games, like this time last year, we were sitting 7-2. Mm. I think we were sitting number two on the table. One of the things that winning football games does is it covers up some things that exist in football departments. Equally, when you're sitting, 9-1 down, it exposes a lot of things. And so... I guess all through my business career, I've always had a saying, never waste a good crisis. And our view about this at the moment is that it's given us a great opportunity to just turn over every rock, including in our football department. And we've got a group of people working on that, and we're going to get some great improvements.
So before I let the other boys throw us, what have you found in turning the rocks over?
Well, I think that one of the things that are emerging is that we could probably do better in our medical and physical preparation area. You've got to obviously quite clearly ask yourself that question. If you've got the injury toll that we've got, you've got to say, okay, well, are we doing enough in this area? Now, as the guys point out to me, of those 11, 8 of those are knock injuries, 4 soft tissue. And probably there's some argument about whether or not you can deal with those knock injuries. But, I guess our view about it is that we've got to do better. We can't afford to have another season where we've got 11 of our best players sitting on the sidelines. So we just have to look at absolutely everything, and that's underway at the moment.
John Mark Robinson here.
Hello, Mark, how are you?
I'm okay. I don't know if it's going to be okay after I ask you these questions, but you keep saying 11 players, and this is beside the point a little, but I've just got the round one team up, which lost against Melbourne, and you're missing about three players. So, the rot set in far, far before, you had 11 of your best 22 players out. But anyway, that's just an argument.
Yep.
More importantly, since Rockets been up there. There's been a lot of off-field dramas. He's spoken about these players being professional. A, do you believe you've got a real cultural problem? And B, how far did the club investigate Carmichael Hunt and his activities when it was shown that his dealings with cocaine, etc., whilst he was still contracted to the club? And that was soon after the season ended, actually.
Yeah, okay, so there's two questions there.
Yep.
And so let me deal with both of them, Mark. Let's deal with this, the drinking issue, firstly. So what we're talking about here is a situation where you had initially four boys and they were having beers at the Mayweather fight. And then you had another situation more recently where you had two boys that had two glasses of red wine. Now, there's no suggestion of anyone drink driving or no one suggesting that anyone, you know, trashed hotel rooms or misbehaved or did the wrong thing by anyone. In the case of the Mayweather fight, I'm guilty of having a beer myself.
You're not a contracted player, John.
No, that's true. And my point, though, Mark, out of all of that is this, that we don't have a behavioural cultural problem. So that's the first point. What we do have, though, was a group of players who came together and demanded certain things of each other and themselves. And any good functioning, in fact, proper functioning team has four components to it. The first one, you've got to have good leadership. Secondly, you've got to have a set of agreed actions that which the group agrees on. Thirdly, there's got to be accountability. And fourthly, and most importantly, there has to be consequences where there's a failure to attend to those issues that have been agreed. Now, what we saw over the last two occasions where players have been called out for alcohol failure is consequences flowing from self-imposed standards. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not a big supporter of prohibition. I mean, prohibition died out in the 30s. In America, prohibition was seen to be a disaster. It's not about prohibition, Mark. It's about a group of players setting some standards for themselves to go until the period of the bye and demanding accountability and then imposing consequences.
Isn't that even worse, John? Sorry. I see that as even worse, that it's not about having a beer. It's not about a skin fold. It's not about whatever it is. It's the fact that they made a decision over 3 weeks and they don't have enough respect for each other to follow that through.
I'm not going to argue with that. I think that there was no one more bitterly disappointed than I. No one more bitterly disappointed than our supporters. When I was down there explaining it last week, a number of supporters said to me, John, look, you've got a guy like Dixon off the field. I've paid my membership. I've come to watch your best players out there on the ground. It's a wrong decision that you've made. You should not have allowed the club to take the best players off in circumstances where one guy's had two glasses of wine. My answer to that was a simple one. The players are demanding of standards. Those players are going to learn that there is a standard that's required and that the club is going to fall in 110% behind the insistence by the playing group on the standards by themselves.
John, on the illicit drug situation,
yes,
I'm going to make a generalisation here and say I reckon most clubs have got an illicit drug problem. Some of it's big, some of it's minor. Because that's what everyone tells us. It's part of the community, rah, rah, rah. You had a player, and we all know the situation, Carmichael Hunt.
Yep.
How deep did you go to investigate whether the club had a serious cocaine issue?
Okay, so Mark, let me talk about that and explain it this way. In Queensland, we've had a standing royal commission investigating this issue. The Standing Royal Commission has been investigating it now for nearly 12 months.
Yep.
And there have been 11 people charged with possession and other sorts of activities in relation to cocaine. All of those people have had some association with rugby league. Now, it defies credibility. It just defies logic and credibility for there to be a suggestion that a Standing Royal Commission in Queensland is in some manner, shape or form protecting the Gold Coast Suns and their players. I mean, That's just not on.
No, now, I accept that.
Now, but this Royal Commission has coercive powers. It can force our people into the witness box, and we don't know whether any of our people have been put in the witness box. It can tap our people's telephones, as they've done with Carmichael Hunt and the others that have been charged. It defies credibility. It absolutely defies credibility to suggest that that organisation, with all of the lawyers attached to it, all of the barristers floating around in it, the police force seconded to it, wouldn't have looked at the timing of the Carmichael Hunt purchases in the same way as the media have, and wouldn't have looked at whether or not there was any skerrick of evidence against any of our players. So the reality is that you've got a standing Royal Commission who's been looking at this issue, and they haven't preferred any charges against our players, probably because there's no evidence.
It's really interesting you say that, John, because you know, everyone thinks the Essendon players and the Essendon Football Club are guilty of taking banned drugs. But after a 12-month Australian crime investigation and a two-year forensic investigation of lawyers and questions and players being questioned, the players were found not guilty of taking performance-enhancing drugs.
So, Mark, let me keep going because there's two other bits to this. The second piece is that we, as you know as well as I do, under the AFL illicit drugs policy, you can go and self-report. And when you self-report, nothing happens. Now, when I say nothing happens, you're directed to the medical staff, there's a rehabilitation program, there's regular and ongoing testing, and of course consequence flow on the third strike, as it were. We went to our playing group and we said to them, okay, this is all floating around, you're reading it every day, the media at your doorstep, come forward. Here's your opportunity with a zero consequence for you. Come forward under the illicit drugs policy, and no one came forward. So no risk to them to come forward, and no one came forward.
That's interesting you say that, because if the club really wanted to know, I reckon you could get that out of the AFL.
Well, the third point, Mark, third point. The AFL knows, because they have information, of the testing results. Now, the information that we get is that in relation to the whole of the issue of illicit drugs, our club is better than the average club. That's how they describe it. So our club, the Gold Coast Suns, the testing results show that we're better than the average club. Now, I've got it from the similar sources, I guess, to where you guys get things from, that we're actually in the top quartile. In other words, we're in the top best four clubs as far as testing results show. So the reason why the AFL haven't been jumping up and down about a drugs culture at the Gold Coast is not because they're wanting to do a favour for John Witherup and look after him. The reality is they know what those test results are. They know what the culture piece is on the Gold Coast. And frankly, if it wasn't in a good way, then there would be much different and much sterner action. So the three pieces around that, Mark.
Yeah, no, they're solid, John. I reckon you're solid in your answering. I've got Nick Maxwell and Terry Wallace here jumping up and down. Want to change the topic.
John,
look, I just want to get it back onto the field and go to your recruiting. Terry Wallace here.
Yes, Terry.
When the original draft plans were there, and there's always going to be comparisons between you and the GWS, original draft plans were drawn up and GWS were given two goes at the national draft. They were given a mini draft to be able to bring in extra selections. That was based on the back of that the AFL, both management and commission, believed that Gold Coast would be better to be able to attract senior players to their football club than it would be difficult for the GWS to be able to do the same thing. I have a look at the senior players that you've been able to attract from the footy clubs. I look at Ablett, Malcheski, Harbour, Ariska, Celli and Stanley at the moment. Ones that didn't work, Bock, Cracker, Brown, Fraser, Brennan. I then have a look at the flip side of that and have a look at what GWS have been able to attract, where it's been said that they wouldn't be able to attract them and the Gold Coast would be such a popular place for players to go. They've got Ward, Mumford, Griffin, Shaw, Patful, Davis, Scully, Palmer. They have absolutely slaughtered your team for senior players brought to their football club when the whole structure of the thing was set up to give them more picks. Now, either you guys didn't support your younger players with enough senior players, or got them wrong, or a little bit of a combination of both. But clearly, it's ended up being a double dip where GWS got more first-round picks and they've ended up with far, far more really top-line senior players. Did you guys get that part of it right?
Well, I guess, Terry, let me sort of repeat what the experts tell me. That is, you know, people like Malcolm and Rocket and others. They don't really have any difficulties with the allocation of the draft as we received it. No one, I haven't heard one person make that complaint. I think there has been an expression of some disappointment in relation to some of the senior players who came to us, but there's been a very deliberate strategy on behalf of our people to stay with the talent, young talent that we've had, and build on that. Now, I think it's fair, absolutely fair, for people like yourself to be raising that question. We're asking the same thing internally. The preliminary responses that I've been given over the last week or so is that the view from new people, including Rocket, is that we should stay the course, that you know, there's some what I guess you can call tinkering in terms of trades, etc., that should be looked at, but they don't want to wholesale change the direction that they're going in. And, you know, look, GWS, full credit to them. They're having a good year. Not as good as we had last year, but they're having a good year this year, and I hope they don't get this injury problem that we've got.
One last question, as I know you've got to go. Is Rodney Eade, who would have come up here with pretty high expectations, is he in for the long haul now, and has he had to really change those expectations?
Oh, no, look, he's in for the long haul. I was only with him about 2 minutes ago. He's in great spirit. He's exactly the sort of guy that we need. He's measured, he's calm, he's clever, he recognises that we've got a fundamental problem. We haven't got enough good players on the field. In my chairman's lounge, I've got a winning team today. He's doing the fine work, pulling apart all the assumptions, working out, you know, are we right, and then working out how we get our playing strength back, and then it'll be hold on to your hat when the Gold Coast Suns come after you.
But so John, I know you got to go, but mate, you sacked Guy McKenna because you thought you're going very close to the promised land, and right now you're in hell. And I know you got injuries. But I mean,
no one feeling that more than me.
I'm sure you are, John. Yeah. You're so passionate about your club, but yep. I just can't believe that you and the club don't give some sort of ground, saying, you know, we did take a punt, and at the moment we're in a bit of trouble. But it's like, no, we absolutely think we've made the right decision here, and I absolutely think the jury's out on that.
Well, that's for you to judge. At a board level, we absolutely think we've made the right decision. So we'll be held accountable, I expect, in the long term, and time will tell.
Thanks for being with us, John. There's still a lot of other questions we'd love to ask you, maybe another time.
But, thanks very much, and thanks for your support.
John Witherith here in the box up here at Metricon Stadium.